Parshas Vayishlach starts with Yaakov sending a message to Esav. You have to summarize the message in a sentence. What's the message?
Please don't hurt me.
Okay, that might be the message. Any other thoughts what the message might be? Meaning Yaakov playing the vulnerable one. I know, Esav, you're so powerful and you can hurt me, but don't hurt me. It's not really so clear what the message is. In fact, the exchange, it's, you know, when you send a messenger to go send a message to somebody, you expect when the messenger comes back, he'll have something to say in return, right? You're going to converse with somebody. You're going to tell him, oh, by the way, here's what Yaakov said. So Yaakov expects, okay, what did Esav tell you? When you told him all those things that I told you to tell him, what did he tell you back? We don't really get any of that. We don't really get what Esav told back. Not only that, the whole exchange is both lopsided and incoherent. Yaakov sends mixed messages, first of all, because he says, Im Lavan Garti, you know, Garti, a ger, a stranger, I haven't been successful in achieving any prominence, the brachos that Yitzchak had promised me haven't come true, Ve'echar Ad Ata, Lavan held me up for all these years, all underscoring the fact that he couldn't make his own rules, the blessing of Yavducha Amin has not been fulfilled, but then he started shifting a little bit. Vayihili, Shor v'chamar, Tzon v'eved v'shivcha. By the way, so you know, life is pretty good. I am extraordinarily financially successful. Im lavan garti v'tayin mitzvah shamarti. I'm extraordinarily spiritually successful. I'm every bit as dedicated a Jew as I was when I left. What exactly was he trying to convey? Was he trying to show that everything's been a failure? Or is he trying to say that everything's been this resounding success? He seems to be saying both things at the same time, speaking out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. And furthermore, as we mentioned before, while the Torah records the message of Yaakov, we're told nothing about Esav's response. What are we told about Esav's response? What we're told is, V'yashuba ha-malachim el Yaakov le'mar, banu elachich al Esav, the malachim come back and they tell Yaakov, oh, by the way, we went to Esav, v'gam malach l'krasecha, and he's coming to greet you, v'abra me'os ishimo. And there are 400 people, there's an entourage of 400 people that are together with him. What did Esav say? Are these 400 people a greeting party? Are they people that are ready to fight with me? What are they? Are they his kids? Who are these 400 people? I don't know anything about. Nothing. Nothing is given from Esav to convey what Esav is feeling having received Yaakov's message. Isn't that an important part of the story? Shouldn't that have been included in the conversation? And a third question. Vayira Yaakov Ma'od Vayetzalav. Yaakov was very afraid. So Rashi already notes the problem that there's a double expression over here. Vayira, vayetzer. He was afraid. Okay, we get it. So Rashi tells us he was afraid of two things. He was afraid not only that he might get killed, but Shemi Yahari Gachem. He might have to kill other people. Who was it? Golda Meir, who had that line? Right, that said that even if I can forgive the Arabs for what they've done to us, I can never forgive them for what they've made us do to them. So I don't want to, not only do I not want to get killed, obviously, I don't want to become a killer. I don't want to be someone who's put in a position to kill somebody else. So Yaakov has a double fear. He has a fear of getting killed and a fear of killing. But does that really make sense? Why was he afraid of getting killed? Ooh, Esav has 400 tough guys with him. Yaakov has two guys who just destroyed an entire city. Shimon and Levi couldn't wipe out an entire city. Yaakov's physical strength is unparalleled. You have a team of shepherds trying to figure out, like scratching their heads around this bar with this gigantic boulder on top of it, and Yaakov flips it off like a bottle cap. I mean, we don't often play up this part of Yaakov's personality. Like, it wouldn't be item one on the Shidduch resume. You know, you would mention first, and Ishtam, Yoshev Olim, you know, really sweet, nice, all that. But, you know, somewhere down the line over there, it should be, you know, Iron Man, strong man. He can do anything. He's physically capable of unimaginable things. When Rivka says, Lama Ishakel Gam Shnechem Yom Echad, Rashi explains, Im Yokum Alecha Va'atot Argenu. That Rivka says, you know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid of Esav attacking you. And not because it's going to hurt you, but I'm afraid of what's going to happen to the other guy when he attacks you. Because of course Yaakov is more powerful than Esav. Of course Yaakov will be able to take Esav. So Zalman Saraskin writes, You know, typically, the twin born second is the stronger of the two, and a man of Yaakov's physical abilities really didn't have much to fear in terms of getting killed. But not only that, the other concern is also somewhat unfounded. He was afraid of killing Esav. Habar lo hargecha, hashkem lo hargo. It's halacha. Halacha mefreshes. Someone comes to kill you, the halacha is, kill them. You're allowed to kill a rodik. You're allowed to kill someone who comes to kill you. Self-defense. No problem. You can go to sleep at night with a clear conscience. You don't have to think about it. It's totally fine. So if Esav is in fact coming to kill him, no need to be afraid of killing Esav. If he's coming to kill you, that's what you got to do. That's the halacha. So again, three questions. First of all, Yaakov's message is mixed. I'm so unsuccessful, I'm so successful, which is it? Second of all, we never get Esav's response to Yaakov. And third, why is Yaakov afraid of either of these things, of getting killed or killing somebody else? So Zalman Saratskin, Znayim L'Torah, it's a beautiful chumash, Znayim L'Torah, which, very contemporary types of messages usually, fantastic chidushim and Torah. Zalman Saratskin also wrote a commentary on the Haggadah, that's maybe not as well known as commentary on the chumash, called Hashir V'Hashevach, a beautiful commentary on the Haggadah. I strongly recommend it. The Haggadah of Zalman Saratskin has a nice picture of him in the front, very distinguished looking gentleman. The Chumash does not have a picture of him in the front, it's just, you know, five volume, very beautiful Chumash. So Zalman Saratskin explains that if Esav would have come to attack Yaakov, there would be no concern. Yaakov wouldn't be afraid of him militarily. Yaakov would not be afraid to kill him, because if Esav comes to attack, he deserves whatever he gets. Also, if Esav was coming in peace, Yaakov would have no concern. He's coming to greet me, I can be a mensch, I can greet him appropriately, no problem. The problem here was that Yaakov had no idea what Esav was coming to do. The critical piece of intelligence that was missing is, what's Esav's plan? Yeah, we're gonna meet up with each other. What's the plan, though? Is the plan that he's coming to attack me? I could defend myself if he's doing that. Is the plan that he's coming to be my friend? I could deal with that, too. I could deal with Achi, and I could deal with Esav. I could deal with either way he's coming. I'm fine with that. Not like the Beis Halevi, that Achi is more dangerous than Esav. No, neither is dangerous. I'm fine with either one of those, says Rav Zalman Saratskin, whether he's friend or foe. But the problem is, if I can't size him up, if he has the element of surprise, if he's going to be able to come and give me a big hug and then stab me in the back, there's no way to defend against the element of surprise when you have no idea what he's coming to do. That suffix is the source of Yaakov's anxiety. Sveikos tend to cause a great deal of anxiety. We walk into enemy territory and be more comfortable than walking into a place not knowing if we're in enemy territory or not. That's why the Torah considers all of the non-kosher animals. You know, when we talk about the picture of not kosher, the worst not kosher animal, it is chazer treif. Chazer, what did the chazer do? Why is the chazer worse than, donkey treif, right? Why the chazer? So the chazer is the split hooves, right? It shows you he's got the split hooves. And he doesn't have the chewing of the cud. So we refer to something that gives us mixed messages, something that's confusing, a two-faced type of thing, that's much more difficult, much more challenging than when you're dealing with something that's clear, that's black and white. The Torah tells us, Lo sisna sachicha bilvavecha. It's an issur in the Torah. What's that issur? Lo sisna sachicha bilvavecha. You're not allowed to hate another person in your heart. Says the Rambam, yeah, if you make your hatred obvious, and you don't just keep it in your heart, you're not getting any mitzvah awards, but you're not in violation of L'sisna Sachicha B'Vavecha. You're in violation of the L'Recha Kamocha, because you don't love him like you're supposed to love him, but it's not a violation of L'sisna Sachicha B'Vavecha. The Isser of L'sisna Sachicha B'Vavecha is dafka if you keep that hatred in your heart and you act toward the person like he's your best friend. Which is an amazing thing. Why would that be worse? I would think, you know, sometimes there are just people that rub you the wrong way, right? There are some people in your life that you'll find that you meet that you hit it off right away. It's like, you know, even if you're not so close to them, it's like, it's what we call in Hebrew chen. You know, it's just like, I like that guy. I always liked that guy. Just such a nice guy. I always get along well with that guy. Even if I'm not so close to him, it's just like, but then there are some people that, for whatever reason, on paper, you should be best friends, but they just, it irks you. Something's off. It just, you know, they rub you the wrong way. You just don't like them. So what's the appropriate mode of behavior toward a person that you just don't like? That you find off-putting, that you find, a person who you find to be arrogant, or, you know, something that you don't like, some mida, you know, that you really don't like. Everyone has, like, many people have, like, a specific mida that they see in another person, and just, it's very, really, you know, it's a big turn-off. For me, it's arrogance, right? I see a person who's extremely arrogant, it's just like, just stay away from me, like, I don't want to deal with a person who's sort of full of himself, you know? So, how should you behave toward a person like that? Right? You would think, put on a nice face, smile, be friendly, and, you know, that's it. Go on with your life. It seems that it's worse to be friendly than it is to make it clear that you don't like the guy. You don't have to, like, send him reminder texts every day, still hate you. You know, you don't have to do that. But, like, you know, at least, like, you know, don't go give him a big hug. Don't be buddy-buddy. Why? Why is it worse? And the reason it's worse on a certain level, and I'm not saying halacha l'maisa that you're not supposed to be friendly and nice. I'm just saying that you could see why it's worse to fool a person into thinking that that you are their friend when you're not their friend. Because if a person doesn't know who you are to them, he doesn't know what the nature of the relationship is, he doesn't know if you are his friend, if you really like him, and he thinks you do and you don't, he is likely to trust you with information that might be sensitive. He's likely to confide in you. He's likely to rely on you. And if he only knew what you really felt about him, he wouldn't open himself up to confide in you, to rely on you. And that puts him in a very vulnerable position. Much worse than having a negative relationship with somebody is having a relationship where you just don't know where the relationship is. Where you just don't know what the relationship is. That's why Rashi comments, V'layachlu dabra l'shalom, next week's parasha, Yosef and his brothers weren't getting along. They couldn't speak nicely to him. Says Rashi, Mitoch gnusan lamanu shvacham. From the gnus, from the criticism of the shvatim, that they couldn't speak nicely with Yosef, we learn the great shevach of the shvatim. Shelo dibru achas bepeh v'achas b'lev. At least they didn't pretend. Yosef knew exactly where he stood. When Yaakov sent Yosef to go check after his brothers, he knew that was pikuach nefesh. He knew that he was going into enemy territory. He was aware of that, and that's the shevach of the brothers, because somebody who's not sure what to make of somebody else is left very vulnerable. You know, when I was a child, there used to be a television show. It was a single letter. It was V. I don't know what the V stood for, but I think it's V. But anyone know the show? Someone Google it. It's about aliens that came to Earth, right? That's the planet we live on, right? They came to Earth and dressed up. What?
It stands for victory.
Stands for victory. Okay, thank you. And they came dressed up as humans, with this fake skin, but they were really lizards underneath their skin, or something that looked like lizards. So they presented as humans. You could sometimes tell because lizards are cold-blooded. So, you know, if they didn't have, they had a cold handshake or something. Whatever the every single episode, as far as I recall, of the entire existence of that show, I don't know how many seasons it lasted, you can tell me probably. Every single episode had the same plot. The plot was, are they our friends or are they our enemies? Like, that was the terror of the show. Are they with us or are they against us? Are they trying to take over the planet or are they just really trying to help? And that was the most terrifying thing. Lahavdil, I mean, that's what Yaakov is facing. Yaakov is facing an episode of V. He's facing not knowing what my pop culture references are so outdated. I need to update things, but that's what he's saying. Not knowing what Esav is coming to do, what Esav feels toward him, and that answers all the questions that we began with. Yaakov couldn't size up Esav's attitude. So you know what he did? When you're not sure about something, you know, what do? You just like throw a bunch of hints into the conversation and you try to gauge the reaction. You try to see the reaction. You know, you don't know if someone is, I don't know, let's say you meet someone that you know you're supposed to know, but you're not really sure who it is, or like where you know him from. So like, oh, do I know him from yeshiva in Israel? Do I know him from high school? Do I know him from camp? So you start dropping, you know, little hints. Oh, I'm going to Israel soon. And like, you know, okay, is he going to say, oh, you're going to go to yeshiva when you're there? Like, you know, or you drop little things and just see if he'll say something, you know, see if he'll give anything, you know, give any sort of further information that you could. So Yaakov decides to send this message to Esav with all sorts of positive news, negative news. And the job of the malachim is, you know, read him. When you say that I've been successful, does he smile? Does he seem agitated by that? When you say that the brachos that Yitzchak had promised me have not been fulfilled, does he have like a smirk on his face, like, yeah, I'm winning? Or is he sad that you're not doing as well as you had hoped you would do? Read him. Get me a reading on what he's coming to do. And Esav was a great poker player. Esav realized that his only advantage was the element of surprise. He knew that Yaakov was confused, and he therefore did not react. He didn't show his hand. And all the messengers were able to report was that Esav was coming. There are 400 people with him. What are they coming to do? Is it a parade for you? Is it a war against you? No idea. He's coming with 400 people. Yaakov only had reason to fear getting killed by his older and weaker brother because he couldn't adequately prepare for Esav. Like we said, Esav come give him a big hug and then stab him in the back. Mid-embrace. The advantage of surprise was a significant advantage for Esav. On the other hand, if Yaakov prepared for war and greeted Esav with heavy artillery, so what might happen? He might be killing an innocent brother who's trying to just give him a hug. He might be killed. Shema Yarug, Shema Yahareg, that he might get killed or he might kill, is not a concern that he might justifiably kill. Nor is it a concern that Esav will overpower him and kill him. Neither of those are a concern. The concern is he might unjustifiably kill. Or Esav might trick him and kill him. So how does Yaakov prepare? What does he do? He prepares for a friend. He sends gifts. He prepares for a foe. He prepares for war. But most of all, he teaches us a lesson in what to do in times of sfeikos. Because there are lots of times in life where we have sfeikos, where we're not sure what direction we're headed in. And that is tefillah. Tefillah is most powerful in times of sfeikos. We know that we're in trouble. Our brain teaches us to come to grips with the situation. You know, when people, Rachman al-Tzlan, suffer through avelus, the avelus is often easier than the weeks leading up to it. When someone is ill and they're sort of, you know, hanging on day by day and you're not sure, and are they going to get better? Are they not? Is it going to happen today? That's a much more challenging time for most people than after the patira. Because after the patira, it's tragic, it's terrible. They know what they're dealing with. They know what they have. Sfeikos are very, very difficult to get through. And that's why our religion has it, that during those times of sfeikos, what we call an es tzara, and that's when we have a mitzvah d'oraisa l'chala deos, to daven. Because there's one rock solid thing in our lives, no matter what sort of sfeikos we have, and that one rock solid thing is the Ribono Shel Olam. That's always there, and that's a natural human tendency that when everything seems to be in flux, we try to go back to that which is consistent. That's what they've always told us. You know, in all the years teaching in high school, there have been, unfortunately, so many times where someone was diagnosed with an illness or someone had something terrible happen in their family or something. And what's the number one bit of advice for all the friends and the teachers and everything else in school? Just be normal. Just be there. Just be regular. Don't go over and make nice the whole day to the kid. Don't just be normal. Why? Because that is his consistency. That's what he's always had and will continue to have. And in that, he finds comfort. What we have as Jews, always, no matter what, Haya, Hove, V'yihye, is the Ribono Shel Olam. So no matter what kinds of sfeikos we have in relationships, in charting out our future, a Baal Emuna, a Baal Bitachon, someone who can appreciate a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, is likely to face much less anxiety. You meet lots of different kinds of people. Anxiety, according to many of the Baal Musar, and I think it's 100% correct, anxiety often has to be treated, but anxiety very often is a reflection of a lack of bitachon. Why am I so nervous? Why am I so worried? Because I don't have that rock as strong as it should be in my life. If I had the Ribono Shel Olam constantly, and I know that he's always there, then, you know, Gam ki elech begeitz al maves lo ira ra ki ata imadi. It doesn't matter what life sends my way. The Ribono Shel Olam is always there. And that's ultimately the greatest message that Yaakov teaches us. He had to send gifts, and he had to prepare for war, yeah, because he had a massive suffix. And the way to deal with the massive suffix is in the third preparation, and that is through tefillah. Okay.